On Thursday morning, on his way to work a few weeks ago, Dave remembered he was supposed to buy a bottle of wine. He furrowed his brow as he tried to remember what the occasion was, and he couldn't. All he could remember was that he wanted to buy something special. Now, this has been happening disturbingly frequently to Dave these days. Sometimes it happens in the morning as he's about to leave for work. He finds he's galloped up the stairs, often in his coat and hat, sometimes even in his boots, run up the stairs on some vitally important mission that he can no longer recall when he gets to his bedroom, which is where he was pretty sure he was going. All he can do is stand by the bureau like one of those poor dumb moose that wander into subdivisions when they get that parasite in their brains, moving his eyes woefully around the room in case there was a clue somewhere. As far as Dave can figure, whatever has moved into his brain has been marching around with a clipboard and a ladder unscrewing light bulbs. More than once in the evenings, Dave has stood up abruptly right in the middle of a television commercial and walked into the den because, well, that's the problem, isn't it? He can't remember why he went into the den. And the dog always follows Dave around at night, just in case it might be time for a walk. So the two of them stand there, Dave and the dog, staring at Dave's desk. And they both got the same perplexed expression. It was 10:05 when Dave remembered that he was supposed to buy wine. He crossed the street, and he hesitated in front of the Vinyl Cafe. He still couldn't remember what the wine was for, but maybe he thought he should go and buy it before he opened up, before he forgot. There were no other customers when he got to the liquor store, just three clerks, leisurely restocking the shelves and chatting amongst themselves. Now, there were four cash registers in the store, but nothing to indicate where he should take his wine. There wasn't a clerk at any of them, and no signs or gates or anything to suggest a course of action, so Dave chose the cash register nearest the door. He put his four bottles of wine down on the counter, and he got out his wallet, and he put his credit card down beside the wine, and Dave wasn't feeling any pressure from time. He wasn't in a hurry, so he just stood there, and after a moment, he watched one of the three clerks languidly drift up to the farthest cash register from where he was standing. Dave didn't move. And the clerk looked over at him, and in a voice Dave would later describe as being a combination of disinterest and aggression, said, "Over here." Dave said, "I have four bottles of wine and my credit card. Could you come over to this one?" And the clerk shook his head and said, "This is the one that's open." Dave felt all the goodness that had accrued to him during his morning walk evaporate. Felt his mellowness fade away. Felt himself slip into an elbows-up mood. Heard himself say, "Well, I'll come back when this one is open." And he walked out of the store, feeling very pleased with himself. He walked out into the winter air, and he squinted at the men and women walking to and fro on both sides of the street, and he wished they knew what he knew. He wished that they knew what he had done for them. He didn't have the wine he'd come for, but he was feeling pretty darn good about himself. And the feeling stayed with him until he got a block and a half away from his record store. Stayed with him until he froze in mid-stride when the little voice inside his head that had been so busy congratulating him suddenly said, "I don't think you have your credit card, Dave." Dave knew right away that he hadn't put the card back in his wallet, and he knew that he should turn right around and go back to the liquor store and retrieve his card, but how could he face the clerk? A few moments ago, Dave had felt so sure that the clerk had been rude to him, so certain that he had been courteous, but now he wasn't so certain. Had he really been courteous? In his heart, he knew he should go back, but he was too proud to. And instead of going back and claiming his card, he walked back to the Vinyl Cafe, and he took off his coat, and he sat down behind the counter. He had to think about this. And the more he thought about it, the more he realized that he was far more tense about what awaited him in the liquor store than he was about losing his credit card. He could see himself standing in front of the liquor store clerk, his cap in his hand. And then he did the only sensible thing he could think of doing. He picked up the telephone and he dialed the bank. And he said, "I'd like to report a stolen credit card." Now, he should have said lost. Lost credit card, but theft seemed to have more dignity to it. And Dave was feeling woefully low on dignity. Now, if he had remembered that at that moment, that Saturday was Sam's birthday party, and that the reason he had wanted the wine in the first place was so when everyone was in bed, he and Morley could quietly toast the anniversary of the birth of their second child. If he had remembered these things, Dave might have acted differently. But he had forgotten the birthday. He'd forgotten that six of Sam's friends had been invited over for supper and a sleepover that very night. The birthday and the party had just flown right out of his head. Forgotten that he'd agreed to order pizza and a cake and get a movie. Forgotten that Morley was going shopping for presents on her way to work. In fact, at the very moment Dave was reporting his stolen credit card, at that very moment, Morley was wheeling a shopping cart towards the cash register at Toys R Us with a Batcave Deluxe in it. If Dave had remembered any of these things, he certainly should have swallowed his pride and returned to the liquor store and retrieved his credit card, but he didn't. So he reported the card stolen, and the woman on the phone typed his report into the bank's computer. It's amazing how fast computers work these days. Morley, who was feeling both pleased and slightly soiled about the Batcave Deluxe, had just begun to unload her shopping cart at the Toys R Us cash register when Dave hung up the phone. It took 20 minutes and two phone calls before Morley convinced the manager that she had not stolen the credit card. After 20 minutes, they apologized to her, but they didn't give her the card back. When Morley got home, there was a message from Dave on the phone. It said, "Phone me before you use the credit card." Now, because she loved her husband, Morley decided to wait until after lunch before she called him. In fact, she didn't feel ready to speak to him until the afternoon. Didn't phone until it was 3:45. Dave said, "Of course I remember the party. Why do you think I was at the liquor store?" Dave said, "No, of course not for the kids. I was getting the wine for us." Dave said, "Of course I'll get the pizza." Dave said, "Of course I'll get the movie." Dave said, "Of course I'll get the Batcave." And then the line went dead, and he hung up, and he looked around him, and he said, "Of course I have no money." Which wasn't completely true. Dave had nearly $12 in his wallet. So he phoned his friend, Kenny Wong. Kenny runs Wong Scottish Meat Pies. He said, tonight's Sam's birthday. There are kids coming over, and I need food." Kenny said, "You got it." Then he closed the store early. He found a toy store in Yorkville, which took a check for the Batcave. And he took it home. He got home. It was 5:15, and there was a note on the refrigerator. It said, "Birthday party instructions." Morley had apparently washed her hands of the party. Dave didn't hardly glance at the note. He said, "Stephanie, I want you to go and get a movie." Sam said, "I want to get the movie." Dave said, "No way." His daughter got up from the television and held out her hand, and Dave put his last $5 bill into it. And as she left, Stephanie looked at Sam, and she said under her voice, so Dave couldn't hear, she said, "I'm going to get The Littlest Mermaid." Unfortunately, she got something else. Unfortunately, she got The Zombie Meets the Crossing Guard. But by the time she got home, the kids were waiting for her in the basement, and Dave was trying to ice the cake. Dave had never iced a cake in his life. He was too preoccupied to ask Steph what movie she'd got. He was trying to spread cake icing he had just taken out of the fridge onto a cake he had just taken out of the microwave. You tried that. The cold icing was ripping golf ball-sized hunks of the cake away from the cake surface. Cake looked like a loaf of bread that had been left out in the rain. Dave looked at the cake, he poured himself a drink, and then Kenny Wong arrived with the meat pies. Enough meat pies for 24 kids. And 24... Kenny's been working on desserts in the restaurant. He's been trying to broaden the product line. You know, you go into a meat pie store, you don't necessarily have dessert in your mind. Enough meat pies for 24 kids and 24 deep-fried Mars bars. Dave said, there's only 6 kids. Kenny said, it's a party, they'll be fine. The kids took one look at the meat pies and rolled their eyes. I thought we were having pizza, said Sam. They were out of pizza, said Dave. Well, only Terrence seemed interested in the pies. Please, he said. Please, said Terrence, can I have 2? The other kids disappeared into the basement with 2 Mars bars apiece. Terrence was back upstairs in 5 minutes. He said, could I have 2 more pies, please? 10 minutes later, Terrence was back upstairs for a third helping. He said, these pies are good. Kenny was beaming. At least someone likes them, he said. Morley came home at 7 o'clock. She looked at the table. The 24 Mars bars had disappeared, but there were plenty of meat pies left. Morley said, what did you give Terrence? Dave looked at her. Morley said, the O'Connors are strict vegetarians. It's on the note. She said, Terrence has never eaten meat. Kenny said, he has now. Morley said, I think I'm going out again. I'll be back in a few hours. I'm gonna drive around for a while. Dave worked out that everyone had been enjoying the zombie meets the crossing guard until the zombie started losing limbs. First a finger fell off, followed by his left ear, which Sam, his eyes as big as saucers, later explained to Dave was devoured by a Jack Russell Terrier before it hit the floor. Apparently, every time the zombie lost a body part, it left a gaping sore which began to pulse and ooze some sort of material that Sam later told Dave looked not quite like pus, more like a cross between pus and melted cheese. Within a few scenes, the zombie was transformed from a mild elementary school teacher to a waddling sore, with still arm enough, however, for what Dave later referred to as the knife scene. It wasn't, however, the violence that had upset the kids, but the morality of it. Why did he do that to the crossing guard? Whimpered Scott at midnight as Dave tried to coax him out from behind the sofa. Dave was flying solo now. Morley had come home, but she had taken herself right to bed. Excuse me, said Bill, I have a headache. I want to go home. Timmy said, my tummy hurts. I want to go home too. Please, could you phone my parents, please? Now, phoning a family at 2 a.m. to ask them if they would mind dropping over to pick up their child because you've just shown them the zombie meets the crossing guard is not the easiest thing in the world to do. But Dave had no choice. It didn't take anyone longer than 20 minutes to get there, and no one said anything. Everyone was polite. But Dave knew what they were thinking. They were thinking he was out of his mind. They were thinking their kids would never come to Sam's house again, certainly not in a sleepover. But when Terrence's parents came, he said, I ate meat. They made me do it. It was soya protein, said Dave glumly. It just looked like meat. Everybody was gone by 2:30, all except Walter Kohlbath. Walter Kohlbath's parents weren't home. Or if they were, they weren't answering the phone. Maybe they turned the ringer off, said Dave. You just stay, they'll be here in the morning. Walter said, okay, and Sam and Walter, the last remaining warriors, went to bed together, and the house was quiet for the first time in hours, and Dave had just drifted off to sleep himself when Sam appeared by his side, poking him and saying, Walter is crying still. He thinks there's been a fire at his house and his parents are dead. Your mom and dad are up north, said Morley. They're up north and they're coming home tomorrow. I know, said Walter, but I'm afraid that the zombie got them. Morley glared at Dave and she put her arm over Walter's shoulders and she said, you come here with me, Walter. You can sleep with us in here. When Dave woke up at 6:30, he woke up with Walter Kolbath's feet sticking into his kidneys. Walter was now horizontal across the bed, his feet drilling into Dave. Morley was nowhere to be seen. Dave got up and he went downstairs. Morley was snoring softly on the living room couch. He went into the kitchen. He put coffee on. He wasn't going back to sleep. He went to the front door. He picked up the morning paper, looked at his dog, and he said, what was the point of all that? The dog seemed to shrug. Pride before the fall, muttered Dave as the coffee began to sputter. If he had only gone back for his credit card, none of this would have happened. He wouldn't have had to send Stephanie for the movie. Was that what he learned? Or was it simpler than that? Maybe the lesson was supposed to be, don't put your credit card down anywhere. Dog shook his collar. The jingle of the tags on the dog's neck echoed in the quiet morning, and nothing else stirred. Dave carried his coffee to the table. He opened up the paper. Then he got out a meat pie out of the fridge, and he dropped it in the dog's dish. Happy birthday, he said.